Hi, everybody. This is Jay Sekulow. We're going to give you an update on the fight for school choice.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. And now your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Sekulow, and we'll take your phone calls if you've got questions and comments about this at 1-800-684-3110. We have done a lot of work on school choice at the American Center for Law and Justice, and one of the big barriers to school choice that's been in the states for decades has been this issue of, if we have a school choice program that allows parents to decide to send their kids, whether it's a voucher or tax credit, to a private school, can it also go to a private religious school? Going so far as to say, can I go to a private religious school? But what about the religious class and issues like that? Well, the Supreme Court has really clarified now for the third time, over a series of cases. This one originated out of Maine. And again, this is Carson versus Macon, 6-3 out of the U.S. Supreme Court. The opinion was written by Chief Justice John Roberts. And it says very clearly, if you are going to have programs that allow parents to choose to send that, you use these the money to send their children to a private school, you cannot exclude religious schools from that parental choice. So a huge win, because it opens the door, not just in Maine, but again clarifies from the Supreme Court. This is the second time in just a few years the Supreme Court has again clarified that when you do these programs, you can't exclude religious schools.
Well, what's interesting about this is Maine had a situation where they did not have secondary schools in a lot of the rural communities, which is a large part of Maine. So what they did was they gave an option of tuition assistance, but they said the school had to be non-sectarian. And as you said, Jordan, six justices of the Supreme Court said that violates. What's interesting here is the free exercise clause. It's when a speech case, it wasn't an establishment clause case, it was the right to free exercise of religion. And the court said, as we've explained in other opinions, interest in separating church and state more fiercely than the federal constitution cannot qualify as compelling in the face of an infringement of free exercise. So this case elevated the free exercise clause of the constitution. That's good. It also says that you cannot target religious institutions for exclusion from otherwise available programs. It noted that the state need not subsidize private education, and nothing requires a state to provide for subsidies for private schools. But once a state decides to do so, it cannot disqualify some private schools solely because they are religious. Now, we've been arguing that for a long time. There was a case I had, Locke versus Davey, where the court ruled against us. That case has now been severely narrowed, almost narrowed out of existence, basically overturned in the way that they're now interpreting it. So what you've got is a big win for parents, and this has been a big issue for us, in parental choice and education.
Yeah, this is, again, it'll make sure that when states are crafting school choice laws, they have great, now solid Supreme Court precedent about making sure that they can include the full plenipotency of schools. And again, remember, none of this is states saying, we're going to send money to Christian schools, we're going to decide to do that. The parent makes the initial choice. I think that's very important here. That's why it's about the free exercise clause, the violation of the free exercise. This is about the parental choice. No one forces states to have school choice programs. We certainly support them at the ACLJ. In Maine, it was a necessity because there were just not enough schools in some of these rural areas that were close by, and yet they still were trying to exclude parents from being able to make the choice to send their kids to religious schools, when that may have been the school that was the closest school to them, that had the least amount of travel time, that made the most sense. And the Supreme Court, 6-3, said no.
We're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. It makes a big difference on how we can proceed ahead.
Yeah, it's very easy to do. You go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Right on the homepage there, you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your tablet, you can do it on your computer. Very quick, though. I mean, by the time we come back from this break, you could have easily made the donation. And you'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those take you to the right page. Put in your info, choose the amount you want to donate. You can also choose if you want to make it a recurring monthly donation. That will still be part of the match. People ask that all the time, and that will be part of the match. So you go to aclj.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. A $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ. right, welcome back to Seculo. So again, in a big victory, some will say it's a religious liberty victory. Some will say it's it's really a victory for school choice, because ultimately it's about parents deciding where they want to send their kids to go. So we know that these programs are popping up all over the country. Some states have had them for a long time. Other states are just starting to tinker with how to set them up. But what they're always looking to is not having a constitutional crisis by setting up these school choice programs. So the Supreme Court has again clarified for the second time in 2 years. First out of, we saw it out of Montana, now Maine, that if you set up these school choice programs, you cannot exclude religious schools from the schools that parents can choose from.
Right.
Remember, it's not just saying we're going to fund religious schools. It's saying the parents that get the voucher, that get the tax credit from the government, for whatever reason the state has decided to set up a school choice program, then you cannot exclude religious schools, or it violates the U.S. Constitution and specifically the free exercise of religion, which we have seen over time for many decades meant very little to the Supreme Court, unfortunately. They would overlook that part of the Constitution and kind of go to other provisions of the Constitution. But for the last 3-4 years, we saw this new life being breathed into that, to the point where, listen, the liberal justices are taking notice. In Justice Sotomayor's dissent, she wrote in 2017. Now, in 2017, I want you to understand what she's talking about here. With all the serious issues we deal with as a country and that the Supreme Court deals with, it was a playground case. A playground reimbursement program to make playgrounds safer in the state of Missouri. So one of these, of course, was a church playground. And she wrote, in 2017, I feared that the court was leading us to a place where separation of church and state is a constitutional slogan, not a constitutional commitment. Today, the court leads us to a place where separation of church and state becomes a constitutional violation. So you see the anger there. I like to put into context that her anger started because she didn't want the church playground to be at the same level as a public school playground.
Safety-wise.
Which, you think the kid playing on the playground or who falls on the playground cares about the doctrine at that point of their age of where they fell? Or you think their parents will really, you know, of where it's safe? But that's where it starts with them. That's how insane they are on these issues. And their commitment to the idea of separation of church and state over actual constitutional protections like the free exercise of religion.
So the court said, we have repeatedly held that a state violates the free exercise clause when it excludes religious observers from otherwise available public benefits. Harry, that does not sound like a difficult concept to grasp, but yet the Supreme Court, I've been litigating this issue for 4 decades. I think they got it right now, and we're getting in the right framework. But you cannot penalize the religious school simply because they have a sectarian base.
I think you're precisely correct, and I think the progressives on the United States Supreme Court are precisely wrong. They fail to understand that this particular decision issued by the United States Supreme Court arguably advances religious freedom. Why? Because the money follows the neutral or independent choice of the parents. It is this program, at least as amended by the United States Supreme Court, does not advance religion. But the progressives fail to understand that. So if you look at Justice Breyer's dissent, he argues that this particular decision advances religious strife. He is completely wrong. He's got it backwards. It advances the concept of neutrality as opposed to religious strife. And I think at the end of the day, the American people will agree with it.
Their version of neutrality, though, the dissent, and this has been consistent with the left side of the court, their view of neutrality is exclude religious participants. That's how they don't view neutral as we'll treat everybody the same, neutral. They believe neutral is you disqualify the religious advocate. This way, the government is neutral as to religion. But here's what the Chief Justice has opinion issued by John Roberts, signed by all 5 of the conservative justices. While a state need not subsidize private education, in other words, you can't compel a state to subsidize private education, once a state decides to do so, it cannot disqualify some private schools solely because they are religious. In other words, the free exercise clause does not allow a burden to be placed on the religious participant simply because they are religious, and that's important to point out.
Yeah, and again, this is just it's up to the parents here. As like Harry was talking about, this is not the state saying we're going to favor religious schools, or you know, the idea is to really think about it like this way: why is it okay for the non-sectarian private schools to get the money? I mean, it's not. This is an idea that the left doesn't like school choice, and anything that could be a barrier to school choice programs, they support. This was a barrier. This idea that if we open this up, is it going to be some constitutional fight that we have to take all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court? Because in some areas, the only choice that people are going to have is potentially religious schools, or they might want to choose religious schools. And so we just won't have a school choice program. But the Supreme Court is making it clear and clear. You hopefully don't have to have another constitutional crisis, whether it's striking down the Blaine Amendments,
which they are now,
which they have been doing for a couple of years, which were anti-Catholic amendments put out in the 1800s. That started, and now we're starting to see really the opening of school choice. So while the left wants to make it, couch it in, oh, this is favoring religion, this is hurting teachers' unions.
Exactly right.
And the major teachers' unions groups, because people say, you know, when they have the choice, they're going to choose probably not the public school, let's put it that way, if they have a choice of some other schools, including private schools that might not be religious at all.
So the court also said, by conditioning the availability of benefits in a manner that the state Maine's constitution does, like the programs, and then it says in Trinity, which is a previous case, effectively this penalizes the free exercise of religion. So in other words, Harry, if you exclude the religious institution simply because it's sectarian, it meets all of the other accreditation requirements. The Northeast Association of Colleges and Schools, yes, checks that box. Has the significant curriculum that they needed, checks that box. But the fact that they were religiously affiliated meant an automatic disqualification. And my view is, here, and I know you've written about this, I have too, is that kind of targeted discrimination is exactly what the Free Exercise Clause was designed to prevent.
You are precisely correct, Jay. Many progressives claim to support the non-discrimination principle, but in reality, they oppose the non-discrimination principle when it comes to either religious schools, religious institutions, or religious individuals. So I think at the end of the day, if you look at this particular decision by the United States Supreme Court, it upholds the principle of non-discrimination, which means that religious institutions, religious parents, they are treated the same as other individuals and groups. And I think at the end of the day, that is what neutrality means. But keep in mind that the progressives on the United States Supreme Court, they are not neutral. They oppose any form of religion within the public square. They assume that Christianity, on one hand, is a majority religion, but then they rightly point out that there are 100 different religions in the United States. So in reality, there is no majority religion in the United States. And so neutrality commands that we treat every single person equally within the meaning of the Free Exercise Clause of the Constitution.
Jordan, what you pointed out, that this is a parent's choice issue, which is totally correct. Here's what the court said. As noted, a neutral benefit program in which public funds flow to religious organizations through the independent choices, that would be the parents, of private benefit recipients does not offend the Establishment Clause. And the court goes on to say that they had in previous cases held that interest in separating church and state more fiercely than the federal constitution cannot qualify as compelling in the face of an infringement of the Free Exercise Clause. So this idea that, well, they could argue the state constitution gives more church-state separation, thus you could exclude religious groups, the Supreme Court finally, and by the way, I've been arguing this for 40 years, finally closes that hole and says, no, a state constitution cannot be used. We had this in New York with a number of cases I litigated at the Supreme Court. A state constitution cannot be used to override the Free Exercise Clause, which, again, sounds basic, the Supremacy Clause, but it took this opinion for the court to get there.
Yeah, it said this is discrimination against religion, the main program, very clear by the U.S. Supreme Court. I'll take Kelly's call very quickly in Arizona on line one. Hey, Kelly.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. From my reading of the Constitution, I thought there was no such thing as separation of church and state. I thought the Constitution said the government shall not dictate what religion a person could keep. So whenever they keep saying separation of church and state, I do not read that in the Constitution. And if you'll answer that after I hang up.
It's not in the Constitution, the separation of church and state. The idea, though, judicially, is certainly in our laws.
We're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. It makes a big difference.
It's very easy to do. You go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those take you to the right page. So you go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. You know, a $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ. Seculo. We alerted the IRS to our FOIA back in July 23rd of 2021. I can hold that up for people watching the broadcast here. That is right here from the ACLJ. Then we had to take the IRS to court, and that began, again, August of 2021. The IRS tried to file a motion to dismiss, and that motion to dismiss was denied. Just to read from you a portion from the application of law section that this group got. I just want you to understand the extent the federal government, the IRS, and these agencies are weaponizing against you. They wrote this, quote, "You educate Christians on what the Bible says in areas where they can be instrumental, including areas of sanctity of life. The biblical teachings are typically affiliated with the D party, but the D, remember, in the legend, that means Republican.
Is that so outrageous?
So biblical teachings now happen to fall between partisan politics. So the IRS sees your faith only as political, which is absurd. They don't need to be in the business of getting involved in theology. That is not the business of the federal government at all, certainly not the IRS. And so because you're typically affiliated with the Republican Party and candidates, this disqualifies you from exemption under the IRS 501c3. This, again, the idea that the IRS was starting to look into people's theology. And so, you know, your theology is too conservative for us, so it's going to favor conservative candidates, so you're now not qualified to be a C3 organization. I mean, it's absurd, but you have to then put the big picture together. The big picture is this. Do you feel like there's an attempt to silence you? I mean, that's what I'm asking the question today for you to call in about. 1-800-684-3110. To silence you about speaking out on the issues that you care about before. And then you get demonized immediately. If you care about border security, you're somehow inhumane. Even if you talk about the inhumane treatment of the people crossing the border illegally and how that's creating a humanitarian crisis. If you ask questions about where is the baby formula going? Is it going to the border instead of into the American shelves because of the border crisis? That's somehow inhumane. No, it's just a question. Where's the government utilizing its resources? Are we shipping it all to Ukraine? I mean, what is the issue when you've got to take care? The idea, again, that it's bad now to say, take care of Americans first.
Harry, I want to ask you this as director of policy. When you look at this entire case, it's good that we got our motion. We beat the government back on the motion to dismiss. What do you see here?
Well, I see several things. First, the Biden administration has launched an unmitigated attack on grassroots Americans, on Christians, on pro-lifers. And this is all part of a war on truth. And it is also part of the Biden administration's attempt to eviscerate Americans' freedom of speech rights and free exercise rights. The Biden administration seeks to entangle religion with government policy contrary to the United States Constitution. And so if you subscribe to certain religious or political views, then the Biden administration seeks to use the entire weight of government to deny you your rights within the meaning of both the law and the Constitution. Albert Einstein has said, a clever person solves problems while a wise person avoids them. The Biden administration shows that it is neither wise nor clever. Instead, it invites problems, leaving the courts to solve problems the IRS unnecessarily causes. This idiocy must stop.
I want to follow up on what you just said with the unnecessary causes. Now, here they're on notice already, the IRS, Harry. I mean, they've been on notice that you can't do this targeted viewpoint discrimination. We don't allow that in the United States. Yet they did it anyways.
They did it because they are political ideologues. They believe in ideology over the Constitution. And so they see the Constitution merely as a stepping stone to power. So they will utilize the Constitution when it serves their interests, but they will deny opponents the rights to deploy the Constitution to protect their interest.
We have done this in court now with beating back the IRS's motion to dismiss, but we also went to the halls of Congress where there was a hearing and they asked us to testify. I did. This is a question from then Representative Devin Nunes, now the head of Truth Social, and my response. Take a listen.
What should Americans be looking for? What should Congress be looking for? And I look forward to you just answering that, providing information for us. But thank you for being here.
So, Congressman, the problem is not just the individual agent. I do not believe for a moment that an individual agent wrote a letter to Christians United, not reviewed, with a legend, including M equals the word of God, you know, D equals Republican. I mean, and first of all, just think about that for a moment. The idea that they would even do that.
To me, that still is the issue. The fact that the IRS thought they could do this. That's what's so absurd.
They'll protect the liberal interest groups. I can't imagine a liberal group getting a letter like this, a liberal religious group getting into their theology and saying, well, you know, you're going to help the R's too much, but the R means Democrat, and getting deep into, oh, well, your kids go to a progressive school, like they pointed out the homeschool mom in the letter. So if they go to a progressive school, that must mean that you're a progressive group, so you're not going to be eligible for C3 status. The idea is political control. So the silencing of your free speech rights is political control. And if they silence your free speech rights, they're silencing your right to organize, your right to petition the government for redress of grievances. They are silencing your religious freedom rights, the free exercise of religion. These are all, the free press, all are based on the idea that we have the freedom of speech and that the government very, very rarely gets involved and says this kind of speech is not going to be allowed. And in those kind of situations, the government, even when it's criminal, even when it's really vile speech, the government and the courts have been very weary of condemning that speech. That's why when they start saying awful but lawful speech, they have a very different view of what they think. They think we should be the Europeans who don't have real freedom of speech, who rely on parliament and laws to say what you can and can't say that year.
What's interesting here, of course, is that the IRS, I keep going back to this, thought they actually could do this. And Harry, I think the dangerous thing here, and I'm glad that we were able to file this lawsuit, and we're going to find out if this was a national campaign, and we're going to shut it down. But the fact that they did it shows the hubris, shows the fact that despite a consent decree saying you can't do it, filed in Washington, D.C. by a federal judge, they still did it anyways.
I think that's correct. And so many of the bureaucrats in government, many of the individuals who are part and parcel of the deep state believe that free speech is a luxury which we can no longer afford. Elites in America, like Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Canada, they admire China's social credit system and they seek political control, as Jordan suggests. It's all part and parcel, I would argue, of the World Economic Forum's attempt to control rank and file Americans. And I think the American people should not stand for it.
We're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. It makes a big difference on how we can proceed ahead.
Yeah, it's very easy to do. You go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Right on the homepage there, you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your tablet, you can do it on your computer. Very quick, though. I mean, by the time we come back from this break, you could have easily made the donation. And you'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those take you to the right page. Put in your info, choose the amount you want to donate. You can also choose if you want to make it a recurring monthly donation. That will still be part of the match. People ask that all the time. And that will be part of the match. So you go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. You know, a $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome back to Seculo. We are continuing to take your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. This idea, and I just want to get a sense from you. Do you feel like the Biden administration is trying to silence you? I mean, it looks like by all efforts, they're trying to scare you away from political organizing. Leading up to, I mean, we have elections going on all the time right now with primaries, a lot of primaries tonight that have been in the news, but there's going to be primaries all leading up to, and then there's the actual midterm elections in November. And the idea of silencing you or making you feel demonized by being part of a movement that they, this government disagrees with. I mean, the way, even saying that out of the words, but they are demonizing the idea that we would put baby formula first for Americans. If we could figure out where those supply chains are, they're not giving us information about how much is going to the border, how much is going overseas, instead of when we can't even fill our own shelves in many states across the country where that's becoming a crisis. You think about these crises, gas price crisis, baby formula crisis. Do you think there's a reason why they want to shut you up? They want to make sure you don't get involved in politics? The foreign policy has been a disaster. To say the least, I mean, we've seen Russia invade Ukraine and become this kind of stalemate, horrible war. And we're going to get into some of that later. Other countries trying to join NATO now because they're worried about Russia invading them. I mean, this is real world issues, but they don't want you engaging on. There's a lot of domestic issues at play here. The schools, the curriculum.
As the IRS is worrying about whether you're using the word of God and coming up with legends where D equals T equals Republican. I mean, this is how ridiculous they think we have no idea what they're doing here. So we're going to find out who did this, and that party could well end up being a target of a lawsuit.
Yeah,
frankly,
because here's the truth. There's a 501c3 organization, fine with me that they exist, called Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. They weren't questioned 40 years ago for having views related closely to the R, which would mean the Democrat party. And they even signed on to a letter from Media Matters sent to big tech advertisers on Twitter to try and force Twitter to keep their current content moderation standards or face a boycott. So, again, the IRS has no problem with these groups. And if they treated everyone the same, we'd have no problem with the IRS. But they aren't treating everyone the same. It's a bureaucracy. When President Trump talked about draining the swamp, it's a bureaucracy filled of left-wing Democrats. That's who controls Washington, D.C., and they're powerful because they remain when politicians come and go. And when they think that they're getting signals like they got from President Biden that, this is the most extreme political movement in American history, that is their signal to go after conservative groups. That's when all of our kind of antennas went up and we said, you know what? This is exactly how it started with Lois Lerner. She thought she was following the Barack Obama wanted the IRS to do, as well as members of Congress who are Democrats sending the IRS letters saying go after these groups. What happens is they get nervous. They see the polls, so they attempt a scorched earth political strategy. And the scorched earth is Republicans. How do we disband them? How do we get them ununified? How do we get them to stop speaking out? How do we get them afraid to put the sign in their yard, afraid to talk to their neighbor, afraid to show up at a meeting or attend an event? How do we get them?
We're afraid to express their view, period.
Just their view.
Yeah.
And by the way, when they do express their view on social media platforms, the new public square, we will try and shut it down. we will either deplatform them, we'll put them in Facebook jail and all these new terms that have come apart. It is a full-on assault on your freedom of speech rights to try and silence you before an election so they can hope. I mean, they are hoping to maintain some power, specifically in the U.S. Senate.
I will tell you, like, we're not like a lot of organizations in that we don't have, you know, we don't get a, we get some, and we're appreciative of everything. We're not, we don't get regularly $10 million grants and $1 million grants. That's very rare for us. But it's because of people like you. Lots of people like you. Thank you. Without your support, it doesn't happen. And as we said, we're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. It makes a big difference.
It's very easy to do. You go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those take you to the right page. So you go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. You know, a $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ. Secular.
All right, we want to talk about it. It's been brewing for a couple of months now, and that is with the situation, the war in Ukraine, what I call the war in Eastern Europe. You have now Finland, who has not requested membership in NATO before, who has the longest border with Russia in Eastern Europe, saying they want NATO membership, they want a accession to NATO. And you ask yourself, what does that mean, and why now, and does that escalate the situation? Colonel Wes Smith is with us. First, Wes, your reaction to this. Turkey, by the way, and we'll get into this in a moment, who is a NATO member and has supplied Ukraine with tactical weapons, including very powerful drones, is very hesitant on this.
They are. You know, Sweden and Finland both feel threatened by Putin, and that's Putin's own fault for invading Ukraine. Finland also has bad blood with Russia because Stalin invaded Finland in 1939 and slaughtered thousands and thousands of Finns. So they, for their own national security, both Sweden and Finland want to join. Finland in particular is a strong candidate. They have a huge military. They have the largest artillery units, the largest amount of artillery in all of Europe. They just bought 64 F-35 fighter jets from America. And that 830-mile border you mentioned, Finland has such a large military, they will not require any NATO troops to police that border. They're already policing it themselves. They also already spend 2% of their GDP on national defense, which is technically required in the NATO alliance, although many of the nations don't do it. So both of these countries are strong candidates. Putin said that his reason for invading Ukraine was he was afraid of NATO. He didn't want to get any larger or more powerful. It has backfired. NATO is more united than ever.
Though, Wes, because this is, I'm going to play contrarian here just for a moment. It would seem to me that while you're trying to figure out, the world is trying to figure out how to de-escalate this war in Eastern Europe, and granted, it hasn't gone well for the Russians, but as Jordan has pointed out before, the Russians have something a lot of these other countries don't have, nuclear weapons, many of which are pointed at the United States.
Exactly.
Okay, so you asked this question. Does membership and accession to NATO right now in the middle of all of this, the situation, is that going to inflame the Russians, give them more reason to do something unorthodox and dangerous, like using a tactical nuclear weapon?
Yeah, and that's a legitimate concern. I don't think you can really base national defense policy or defense of Europe based on whether or not Putin will be provoked. But that is a legitimate concern.
Why wouldn't you be? I'm just playing advocate here. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Wouldn't you have to play nine-dimensional chess here? You would think that if you're going to make them, and believe me, I think what Russia did to Ukraine is, I think they've committed war crimes.
Sure.
I think they violated international norms, and there was no justification for them going into Ukraine. Having said that, tens of thousands of people are dead.
Yes.
Children displaced from their homes. It's horrible. Why wouldn't you look at, as a military analyst in the Pentagon, aren't you thinking, okay, if we say yes to Finland now versus 3 months from now when maybe this has calmed down, maybe that's a better time. Is this sending the wrong signal from the United States, because we're still the big funder of NATO, to do this now?
Yeah, and again, that's a legitimate concern. I think part of the thinking, though, is that we really waited to arm the Ukrainians. We were very hesitant to do that because we did not want to provoke Putin. He invaded anyway. And so I think we're a little bit gun-shy in the West of trying to avoid provoking Putin because he is so unpredictable. And the fear is that if we don't let Finland and Sweden join at some point, he will probably invade one of those countries.
There's another interesting dynamic to all this, Jordan, and you mentioned that, is there's a $40 billion requests right now for money from the United States to go to Ukraine, and it has not gotten universal support.
No, no, and it's still stalling in Congress. I mean, I think the idea there is because there's questions about, one, how long it takes the money to get there, our own economy, and what a lot of elected officials are saying, especially on the Republican side, is it's not that they don't want to assist Ukraine against this Russian aggression. There's pretty much unified support for that. But it's like we can't throw out the United States in our interest for that. You got to take care of your own people first. So when they're hurting at the pump, when their mortgages are going up, when prices for everything are rising at extreme levels, when you can't buy baby formula in the United States of America, do you send money to Ukraine? But you can do more than one thing when you're president. So you'd secure the border so that you wouldn't be sending so much of the supplies, the baby formula there. Right. You can also figure out how to get more European engagement in Ukraine so you aren't the only country sending billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars to fight this war.
Which raises the next question, which is, are the Europeans engaged? You've been monitoring this for weeks now. Are they engaged at the level financially to make, have they made the commitments they need to be making, Wes?
For the most part, our major players have. But the thing about giving this $40 billion, as Jordan alluded to, is that, you know, inflation's so high and federal spending, you know, actually increases inflation. But the other thing, too, and Rand Paul brought this up about Ukraine, and that is they have a long history of corruption. We can't just shove cash into Ukraine.
Sure.
And so what Rand Paul has suggested is we have an inspector general who will actually oversee where Ukraine spends this cash. But for the most part,
Britain, I wouldn't be shocked, though, if the Ukrainians object to that. I wouldn't be shocked if they object to
that. I agree.
Because
I agree.
You got Americans involved in their internal governance. However, I don't think Rand Paul's wrong. I understand exactly the concern.
Yeah, exactly.
And folks, I mean, I think this is another issue, and we can take your calls on this as well, 1-800-684-3110, because these are issues that affect America greatly. I mean, we are the number one supporter of Ukraine. This does not seem like something that's going to be ending anytime soon, unfortunately. That's very unfortunate for the people of Ukraine. The isolation of Russia, but are we forgetting China as well? We've talked about that with Secretary Pompeo, Rick Grenell. Every time they're on, is don't pull your eye off what's going on around the rest of the world, and especially with China and Taiwan and the situation there, the genocide going on inside China. I mean, these issues are huge. Our administration currently, the Biden administration, just seems to play them all down. It's like when you see him give a speech, it's a horrendous speech, and it's not just to be mean. It's Vice President Harris saying 14 times we're going to work together in the same 60 seconds, and she can prepare for these moments. She has a huge staff to prepare her for these statements. That's all they've got to say? I mean, you know, when you go to try to figure out the answer on the baby formula, they blame one plant. Why not be working on opening up another plant, getting things, cut the red tape, make sure it's safe, but cut the red tape and fill the shelves. This is absurd in the United States of America. When this I'm is on my Facebook page and you see families who have the money to buy it, who are saying, you know, I'll pay double if you can pick it up for me, if you see it at the grocery store, I'll Venmo you the money and pick it up from your house. I'll do everything, and I'll pay you double for what's already very expensive. And this is to keep their child alive.
Wes and I will remember this. You were not even born yet. This is the Jimmy Carter era all over again. I feel like we're the same thing. Couldn't get gas, couldn't get fuel, right. Couldn't put heat on. Remember, because of the shortages. This is unreal.
It is very unreal. The American people have not struggled like this since the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Both of them happen to be Democrats. And it seems like the Biden administration is a bit tone deaf. I don't think they understand the depth of the struggle or the depth of the American people's dissatisfaction.
Yep.
75% in a recent poll of Americans saying the country is going in the wrong direction.
Last question, Colonel Smith. Where do you see what happens next in Ukraine, do you think?
I think there needs to be a compromise, and hopefully there will be. I think the Donbass region, we're going to have to consider that a loss, Ukraine is, and let Russians keep it. Hopefully that will give Putin an exit ramp, because militarily, Russia is being defeated on the battlefields of Ukraine right now.
But they couldn't, long-term, though, they could keep engaging probably longer than Ukraine could.
Oh, probably. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You know, we talk about all the issues, whether it's the free speech issues we talked about with Rick earlier in the week, Ukraine and Russia, the UN Human Rights Commission, our work at the UN Human Rights Council.
Our work in Jerusalem. We just did that.
All of that is actual work. So when we talk about all of these issues which are in the news, for us and for you who support the ACLJ, that is not just talking to talk. And our broadcast has never been about talking to talk. We've tried to continually make the broadcast more and more about something that even if you just tuned in for 5 minutes, from that 5 minutes, you can take something away that's different than talking heads on cable news or three-minute discussions.
Understand the scope and nature of what's happening. And we are in our matching challenge campaign. So this is where you come in. And I'm going to emphasize what Jordan said. This is only if you're able to do this. If you're not in the financial position to do it, please don't. Pray for the ACLJ. Pray for our team. Encourage others.
You side petition, share. Sign petition,
share it. You know, engage on our social media. I know everybody can't afford it with the price of gas and food and fuel and everything else. But if you can, we really would appreciate your support for the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge month. March and April are matching challenge months. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it, folks.
Yeah, it's very easy to do. You go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Right on the homepage there, you can do it on your phone, you can do it on your tablet, you can do it on your computer. Very quick, though. I mean, by the time we come back from this break, you could have easily made the donation. And you'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those take you to the right page. Put in your info, choose the amount you want to donate. You can also choose if you want to make it a recurring monthly donation. That will still be part of the match. People ask that all the time, and that will be part of the match. So you go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. You know, a $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ. All right, welcome back to Secul. We're taking your phone calls again. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
This is a very interesting comment from Josh on YouTube.
Yeah.
Here's what Josh says about the IRS denial letter. Clearly, they named it D to equal Republican to try and throw off anyone reading it thinking D equals Democrat. They're pulling a sleight of hand deception. Right. Misinformation, disinformation. What is their possible excuse for saying D equals Republican other than that?
No, it's ridiculous, absurd. I mean, it is. There is no other explanation except to throw people off when they're doing document searches.
Yes.
So they're preparing their documents to make it tougher for groups like us to find the information.
Exactly.
By using absurd legends, you know, like the legends, what does this letter stand for? What's this acronym mean? Absurd legends that wouldn't show up in a basic search. So they'll say, oh, nothing came up in your search about that. That is to try and, again, it's an attempt at deception and to deceive and to keep you from the information. This again, it's the biggest issue we face right now is an attempt to silence the opposition voices in the United States of America.
Especially right now.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and take a call.
Sure. Bill in Montana on line one. Hey, Bill.
My question is, what is stopping the U.S. government from eliminating FOIA requests altogether?
That's a great question. So here, you have a federal statute that authorizes Freedom of Information Act requests. Came in the kind of the shadows of Watergate. What the government does, and there's exemptions to where some things are exempt, but what they do is when you file, it starts with a letter. So we send in a Freedom of Information Act letter, and then usually the government doesn't respond. And this was the FOIA letter we sent in. Then they don't respond. And then we've got to go to court, and we file this, a federal lawsuit. And then they try to dismiss it. So you're... And not always the case, but I would say 75% of the time, we end up in federal court over this. So what the government, even though there's a statute, Harry, that says, get this information to the public in the idea of government transparency, the reality is they don't want you to see any of this.
I think that is correct.
Because you're going to find out what happened.
I think that is correct. But it's also important to keep in mind that the deep state leaders have a low opinion of the American people. And they are quite willing to engage in behavior which insults the intelligence of rank and file Americans But it's also important to note that organizations like the ACLJ are equipped with lawyers who've actually read and litigated the statute, and hence we are prepared to fight them at least on equal terms. And to the extent that we have competent jurists who are basically reviewing these requests, more likely than not, we will prevail in the end. But I think it's also important to keep in mind that the government objective, beyond attempting to block us from gaining necessary information, they are also engaged in a somewhat successful campaign to delay the disclosure of offending information. And I think that, to some extent, is what's going on here. And that, I think, is a central issue with respect to FOIA.
I keep on coming back to this, though, for their entire audience. Somebody at the Internal Revenue Service sat down at a keyboard, or somebody up above them did, and typed all this out.
Yeah.
Put D is Democrat, M is Word of God. You believe in the Bible. You're pro-Israel. You're pro-life.
You're a homeschool mom.
You're a homeschool mom. They put that in a document, thinking that was never going to see the light of day.
That's their hope. Their hope is that you get your denial and you say, you know what, I it costs money. I got to find attorneys to appeal this. Then I got to fight this. And seems pretty bad when you get a denial from the IRS. I mean, it was a multi-page denial. It wasn't like a one-pager. That you know, you filed something wrong, fix that, and resubmit. This was like, we really looked into you. We know who you are. And then it gets people thinking, do I want the IRS involved in my life any more deeply than they already are at this point? Even though I did voluntarily submit this information, they're going and looking at how I educate my kids, deciding if my group is going to get IRS C3 status because I happen to decide to homeschool your kids, or what's next if you go to a Christian school. So again, they would never do this if you sent your kids over to some liberal private school. There's no way that letter exists. I guarantee you the letter does not exist. It's never gone out. But this comment from Joe, I think, is really important. Yes. Because he said, good work, ACLJ. The problem is, and this is true, it costs lots of money to sue the government. While the government has a seemingly, and they do, endless money pit and an incredible amount of lawyers. They do. They have an entire Department of Justice with lawyers. But they also have endless resources. So you have to be committed. If you're going to fight these battles and not just talk about them, you have to be committed to the long-term fight. You have to have donors that support your work.
You got to understand that it's not only, and this is where this is a good question, he talks about this endless pit of an incredible amount of lawyers. It's not just the Department of Treasury has lawyers. The Department of Justice has lawyers. There is a FOIA division of lawyers inside the Department of Justice. So, Harry, when you talk about deep state activists, it's deep both in the legal part and in the compliance area. And the fact of the matter is, where Jordan's right, that means we have to be committed.
I think that is correct, because if you look at the deep state, they have been unleashed to go after, for instance, Moms for Liberty. They've been unleashed to go after individuals who believe in the Constitution, who believe that the United States, for instance, is a Republican form of government. So if you believe in the Constitution, it's very possible that the Attorney General, that the Department of Justice will come after you under the leadership of Attorney General Merrick Garland, who basically suggested that parents were engaged in domestic terrorism by showing up at school board meetings and basically contesting the right of school boards to insist that kids wear masks or that kids study critical race theory, you name it. We have to be vigilant, because at the end of the day, the government, particularly in Washington, does not have the best interest of the American people in mind.
You know, 9 years ago, it was May 10th of 2013 when Lois Lerner admitted in the law school classroom what the IRS was doing. Just as a flashback to remind you that they could be back at it, but we're getting ahead of it this time by 20.
Wow.
They used names like Tea Party or Patriots, and they selected cases simply because the application had those names in the title. That was wrong. The IRS would like to apologize for that.
That was wrong. The IRS would like to apologize for that. I want you to think about that one for a moment when you're audited next time. You leave out a receipt. Oh, that was wrong. I apologize for that. But here's what bothers me. This is what she says. They used names like Tea Party. They selected cases simply because the application had those names in it. that was wrong. And then she said the IRS would like to apologize. She was the head of the tax exempt division of the Internal Revenue Service.
Stamping her name onto those questionnaires that we know then originated actually from Washington, D.C. That was, remember, she was still initially trying to blame
Cincinnati,
a regional office, for this problem and the targeting. Again, I think where it's a reminder is when you put all these agencies together and you've got an administration facing bad poll numbers, they start freaking out. They start doing things that are wrong to try and save themselves politically. And they're willing to do things that Republicans never would be willing to do, and they shouldn't, because it's wrong and it's really illegal to weaponize these branches of government.
Without your support, it doesn't happen. And as we said, we're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. It makes a big difference.
It's very easy to do. You go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You'll see matching challenge or donate. Either one of those will take you to the right page. So you go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time to support our work. As you said, we're grassroots. A $25 donation is a big deal for the ACLJ.